And joining us today is award-winning author and journalist Doug Swanson. His book is called Cult of Glory, The Bold and Brutal History of the Texas Rangers. Doug, thank you so much for being with us here today.
Thank you, Louis. My pleasure.
Now, as I mentioned, you're an award-winning journalist and author. Tell us a little bit about how did you get into writing?
I was a reporter and an editor at Dallas Morning News for more than 30 years, so that's my basic background as an investigative reporter and editor. But I've always been writing on the side. I've written some crime novels, and then I wrote a biography of the gambling racketeer Benny Binion a few years ago, and this Ranger book is my second nonfiction book.
I forgot to mention that you are also a journalism professor at the University of Pittsburgh, and as we all know, most of us are working and teaching online now remotely, so that's working okay for you?
Yes, who knows what the fall semester is going to look like. That's going to be a challenge, but right now it's going okay, but you know, we'll see. We're all up in the air, right?
Yes, that's correct. We are visiting with award-winning author and journalist Doug Swanson. The name of the book is Cult of Glory, The Bold and Brutal History of the Texas Rangers. Now, the Texas Rangers, when we think of that, what comes to our mind probably are Captain Woodrow Call and Augustus McRae from the Larry McMurtry's Pulitzer-winning novel Lonesome Dove. But we also get flashbacks of some of the TV shows as well. Chuck Norris, and also the TV show Laredo, where it was a bunch of Texas Rangers, and they went out and did all the good stuff. But what you tell us in your book is you kind of open it up and tell us a little bit about some of the darker chapters in the Texas history of the Texas Rangers. So let's start back with 1823, when the first Rangers were formed.
Sure, but first I want to say it's funny you would mention Laredo, because that was my first experience with the Rangers, was watching that show, Laredo. That's what I remember, and I was a young kid, but that's the first time I think I heard Texas Rangers. But anyway, yeah, they started in 1823 when Texas was still a part of Mexico. As you know, Stephen F. Austin brought his settlers in, and on Austin's first trip to Texas, he met the Caracalla Indians, who were a coastal tribe in Texas, been here for thousands of years. And Austin's first thought was, these people need to be exterminated. So the first Rangers in 1823 were 10 guys put together to chase and fight the Caracuas. They were not gunslingers. They were teachers and land surveyors, carpenters, farmers, that sort of thing. They went down the Colorado River to set up a little fort. After a couple of months, they ran out of ammunition and food, so had to come back home. Never did engage the Caracalla. So the first formation of the Rangers was a bit inauspicious, but that's what happened in 1823.
In the book, you described the Caracallas as not your typical Native American. These men were pretty big.
They were very big and muscular and tattooed, so they looked fearsome. And they had a reputation as cannibals. Now, a lot of scholars say that reputation was overblown, but that added to their fearsome appearance and demeanor. When you look at somebody who's, you know, 6 or 7 inches taller than you are, more muscular, and you think he wants to eat you, you're going to be a little bit alarmed.
Stephen Austin, as you mentioned, everybody knows a little bit about Stephen Austin, but perhaps what they don't know is what you just told us a little while ago. And some people call him the father of Anglo-Texas, and talking about settlers moving in into East Texas from states like Tennessee, Arkansas, and Mississippi, other places like that. It was very different for them going into the Texas, but because I guess, and correct me if I'm wrong, the government wanted to kind of get these people to settle down in this big, massive area. And when people saw how big the state was, they were impressed and they wanted a piece of that land.
Sure. Yeah, Mexico brought them in, helped bring them in. It turned out to be, of course, a colossal mistake by Mexico, because Texas soon declared its independence. But what a lot of people forget, and this is not an original finding by me, many of these settlers coming in the early years were coming in because they wanted to establish a cotton empire with their slaves. They saw South Central Texas, East Texas, as prime cotton growing ground, and they needed slaves to cultivate that. And Austin while not an ardent proponent of slavery, recognized that slavery was going to be necessary for Texas to thrive. So that's a big part of why the settlers came here originally, and I think we tend to forget that.
We're visiting with award-winning journalist and author Doug Swanson. The name of the book is Cult of Glory, and this is the bold and brutal history of the Texas Rangers. As you mentioned, they came in here because they wanted to grow cotton. They wanted to bring their slaves. But as you progress in the book and you introduce us, these people were called themselves Texians. Is that what they called themselves? And they figured, or they thought, yes, that all Indians were thieves.
Yes, they had very little tolerance for Indians, not just the Karankawa, the Cherokee, for example. There was an offshoot of the Cherokee that had settled in East Texas near Rusk, and these were what was then referred to as a civilized tribe. They had schools, they had farms. They were attempting, in many ways, to assimilate themselves into this Anglo society. But, you know, the white people wanted the land, and there were some skirmishes that broke out. And finally, the Rangers and other militia drove the Cherokee out of Texas. And it happened with other tribes, too. I mean, that was the early function of the Rangers, was to clear Native Americans off the land. Now, we can look at it now and say this was right, this was wrong, whatever. The fact is, that's what they did, and they were really good at it.
And they were referred to by the Mexican people as Los Diablos Tejanos.
Right. That came out of the Mexican-American War in 1846-1847, where, in essence, the United States invaded Mexico. The Rangers were a big part of that. The Rangers were part of the U.S. Army, so they weren't officially Rangers then, but they stuck together as Rangers, and they served as advanced scouts and guerrilla fighters and intelligence gatherers. They were extremely effective. They helped the Army in many ways. General Zachary Taylor was very grateful for the Rangers, but he also wanted to get rid of the Rangers, and that's because they committed many atrocities. They would move into villages and execute every man in the village. They killed any number of innocent people. They would take prisoners and execute them. And that's why they became known as Los Diablos Tejanos. They were very good at what they did, good and bad.
They were referred to, as you mentioned, there were two B presidents, Zachary Taylor and Ulysses Grant, on the Army of the U.S. But Second Lieutenant Ulysses Grant apparently had written to his fiancée saying something like, "It seemed to think it perfectly right to impose upon the people of Concord City to any extent, and even to murder them, where the act can be covered by the dark."
Yeah, Grant was appalled, and it took a lot to appall Grant. And, you know, I'm sure you know your Civil War history. This was not a guy who flinched from blood and death, but when he saw what the Rangers were doing, he was taken aback. I mean, they were good at what they did, but they also killed a tremendous number of people who did not deserve to be killed.
Tell us a little bit about Ranger Walker and his role that he had, and also in perhaps introducing the Colt. At that point, it was only, I think, five rounds, but he went to Samuel Colt and told him, "This is what I want," and also to go to the Army and tell him that this Colt was very good.
Yeah, Samuel Colt had developed this five-shot revolver, and it was not a success at first. It was difficult. It sometimes blew up. It was expensive, and he didn't sell many of them. He was pretty much out of business. But for some reason, the Texas Navy — some people don't know that Texas had a Navy for a while — bought some of these pistols, and they found their way into the hands of the Rangers eventually, and the Rangers used them against the Comanches. It used to be the Rangers were using single-shot weapons. The Comanches would charge. The Rangers would fire. The Comanches would retreat, and while the Rangers were reloading, the Comanches would charge again. But now the Rangers had these five-shot pistols, and that was a very effective weapon. Walker was part of this first company of Rangers that used this weapon. And Walker goes to the Mexican War and uses the weapon there, and he is in touch with Colt. He visits with Colt and recommends to Colt some changes to the weapon that make it much more efficient. And Colt uses those changes and makes a really nice weapon. Walker is killed in the Mexican War and in the Battle of Comatla, but the Colt pistol goes on to become the weapon that changed the West, that won the West, and you know, Walker played a big part in that.
We're visiting with award-winning author and journalist Doug Swanson. He is the author of the book Cult of Glory, The Bold and Brutal History of the Texas Rangers. Let's move on. We've talked about the U.S.-Mexico War, but now the Civil War breaks out in 1861, and the Rangers sided with the Confederates. What's interesting is what one of the Ranger fighters said, John Rip Ford, if you wouldn't mind sharing with us.
Well, John Rip Ford, that was his nickname, a very famous Ranger, but also believed that slavery was sanctioned by the Bible, that God was in favor of slavery. So he fought very hard for slavery in Texas. He also aligned himself with those who believed that we could go take over countries in Central America like Nicaragua and parts of northern Mexico and establish slave empires there. So Ford has a very mixed record that way. He was a very courageous Indian fighter. He was courageous in the Mexican-American War. He fought Juan Cortina down on the border. And at the same time, he wrote devoutly about how it was God's will that we have slavery in Texas.
And that encouraged a lot of the other people, I guess, living in Texas and coming in from Texas. So we're starting to see incidents happening in Texas, like Mississippi and Georgia, a lot of lynchings. And not only were there lynchings, they made these like public spectacles and they were selling refreshments and all that going on.
Oh, sure. It was like the county fair. I mean, I'm not being flip about it. They would have a lynching in the town square. And as you say, they would sell refreshments. Crowds would show up and, you know, mingle and have a good time and watch this person be strung up and killed. The photographers would take photos of it and make it into postcards. And people would buy these postcards and mail them off. It was a celebratory occasion in many ways. And this happened across the state many, many, many times. It's a terrible, tragic history that really hasn't been talked about enough, in my opinion. But it was not a one-off. This happened all over the place.
So let's talk a little bit about, because as you mentioned, people haven't talked about it too much, but you decided to dive in and you did 5 years worth of research. And as you were an investigative journalist before, tell us a little bit about what got you to dive into this project.
Well, I had done this book on Benny Binion that I mentioned, and my publisher wanted what they called a big Texas book. And I thought, well, after the Alamo, what's bigger than the Rangers? They just seemed like a good topic. And the reason is there have been many scholars, many historians who have done great work on the Rangers. But a lot of it has been very discrete periods of history, you know, maybe along the border or during the Indian Wars or in the modern age. And I wanted to take the broad approach and look at the entire Ranger history from 1823 to the present and try to dismantle some of these legends to see what the real story was behind them. So as I started poking at some of these legendary characters, a lot of these stories fell apart pretty quickly. It just didn't hold up to the truth, or there was a really fascinating backstory to them and lots of layers to them that really had not been explored before to my satisfaction. So that, to me, is why it looked like a really fruitful enterprise.
You mentioned that you had reached out to Texas Rangers and Ranger officials, but you didn't get any response via email, telephone calls, anything like that. But what about the people? What got them to come out and talk about it? How did you get people to step up and say, yeah, this is really what happened? Was it mostly historians like yourself, journalists, other professors?
Well, yeah, the previous scholars who had gone through material, but also there's just a wealth of material in the state archives in Austin. You can sit there for months if you want to and read Ranger reports going back to the 1800s. the box after box after box after box. That's one reason it took me 5 years. I badly underestimated the amount of material I was going to have to go through. But Texas, despite some fires and other calamities, has done a good job of cataloging these records. And I would encourage anybody who's interested in these things, you can do it at Texas State Archives and also at the Briscoe Center for American History at the University of Texas at Austin. Has some terrific archives, too. And the original documents are there. You know, I was sitting there one day holding a letter in my hand, written and signed by Sam Houston. You can go through them yourselves. You don't have to be any special person. They're all right there, and it's just fascinating.
At what point did the Rangers, did somebody kind of step forward and say, okay, guys, you got to kind of take it easy, look what's going on, we're being watched? Because in the 1950s, I remember, and I listened to this show a lot too within the last few years, Tales of the Texas Rangers, NBC Radio, and Texas Ranger Jace Pearson is the protagonist, and a lot of the stuff that they tell you about, there, some of them are pretty dark, but it's dark from the criminal side, not from the Ranger side.
Right. What you have to recognize is when those shows were being produced, the producers almost always sought the cooperation of the Rangers. And the Rangers would only cooperate if they got script approval. So they were on top of things. They made sure that there was not a depiction of the Rangers that was unflattering. So there's that. You mentioned reform. There are two significant examples of attempts at reform. Back in 1919, after all the problems on the border with the executions and all that, there's a state representative named J.T. Canales who tried to reform the Rangers and brought about a series of legislative hearings which laid bare many of the excesses of the Rangers. The transcript runs more than 1,000 pages, and it's down in the state archives. In fact, it's online. Anybody can see it. Canales tried to get some legislative reforms through, and he was blocked in the legislature, so that didn't happen. And in the 1930s, Ma Ferguson became governor. She was extraordinarily corrupt, and she installed a bunch of cronies and hacks in the Rangers, and they were notorious for corruption at that point. When Ferguson left office, a new governor comes in and a new legislature, and they decided to reform the Rangers and put them under the Department of Public Safety. So that's when the Rangers finally began making a turn, however slight, toward being the professional, trained force that we have today. But it, you know, it took a good number of years to get there. But that's where the reform finally got a toehold.
And at what point, Doug, did they start integrating the Rangers, having Hispanics and African Americans? Because correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I remember one of the Rangers named Lone Wolf Gonzalez.
Yes, and he was an interesting figure. You know, a distinguished ranger. He claimed to be descended from Spanish royalty. We're not sure if that's true or not. He claimed a lot of things that were never verified. But most people don't count him as Hispanic. I mean, he had, yes, a name Gonzalez was an odd spelling, G-O-N-Z-A-U-L-L-A-S. But in the modern era, the first actual Hispanic Latino Ranger came on in 1969. The first Black Ranger was not hired until 1988, and that was only after an NAACP complaint. The first two women were hired in 1993. That's after Ann Richards became governor. So right now, there are about 160 Rangers. Four of them are women, eight of them are Black, and 34 are Latino or Hispanic. So, yes, things have changed. You could argue that maybe there should be more than 8 African-Americans in a force of 160. But, you know, the Rangers are making some efforts, and they were a little bit late to the party here, but they are changing.
We are visiting with award-winning author and journalist Doug Swanson. The name of his book is Cult of Glory, The Bold and Brutal History of the Texas Rangers. Recently, something that happened, of course, we all know what happened with George Floyd in Minneapolis, all the things that were going on, pointing to police brutality and injustice. And so in Dallas, Love Field, there was a statue there of one of the Rangers, and it said one riot, one Ranger. And there's even a billboard, I believe, on the way into Dallas. And this is something that recently caught very much attention.
Yeah, I wrote about the statue. The model for the statue, which was done in 1959, 1960, in there, the model was a Ranger named Jay Banks. Very handsome Ranger, muscular. That's why he was the model. He looked like a Ranger, the sculptor said. The problem was Banks had been sent to Mansfield, Texas in 1956 by the governor, Alan Shivers, when the NAACP was attempting to integrate Mansfield High School. And Banks was under instruction to arrest any black student who tried to enroll. And he did the same thing a week later in Texarkana, at Texarkana College. He was there to block black students from integrating white schools. Now, again, he was just following orders. However, he became the face of blocking integration at that time. So I wrote about this in my book, and you know, this statue has been standing there in Love Field in the lobby for the better part of 60 years. It's, you know, it's like the official greeter for the city of Dallas. When I wrote about it, the book came out, and city officials said, you know, maybe that's not what we want up there. So 6 o'clock one morning last week, the city workers showed up and took the statue down and carted it away. It's gone.
Interesting, in a picture that ran in the Dallas Morning News of them bringing down the statue, one of the Rangers watching, Ranger David Armstrong, African-American.
Yeah, and you know, we have, again, I think we have to give the Rangers their due. They've attempted to join the modern age, and they're making those efforts. There's no doubt about that. The question is, I think, I mean, if I get off a plane at Love Field, I'm an older white guy, and I see a Jay Banks Ranger welcoming me to Dallas. Does that bother me? Well, probably not. But maybe it bothers a black person. Maybe it bothers a Latino. I don't know. I'm really not in favor of taking statues down. I think there should be more statues, maybe a complimentary statue. You know, maybe we should put one up next to Jay Banks of Thurgood Marshall, who led the integration efforts back in 1956. Or let's put up a plaque and explain who this Ranger was and what happened back then. I'm for more education. And I think the city got was worried about protesters, and so they got rid of it.
And you are quoted in the Dallas Morning News in that story saying, "I'm not for silencing or abolishing pieces of history. I'm for explaining them and giving them context. In this case, the statue has a very rich and problematic back history."
Right. And then there's the Banks history, but also there's the base of the statue. And you mentioned the one Ryan, one Ranger slogan. That's on the base of the statue, and it's on those billboards. And in the book, I talk about one riot that did take place up in 1930 in Sherman. There was a black man on trial for assaulting a white woman. Frank Hamer and three other Rangers were sent up to control the crowd, and the mob stormed the courthouse. Frank Hamer and the Rangers fired some shots at them. The mob retreated, but then they set fire to the courthouse. Hamer and the Rangers climbed out the window, got in a car, and left town because they said they needed to call the governor. At that point, the courthouse burned down. When the flames were done, the mob went into the courthouse, got the black man, who may or may not have been alive, we don't know yet, dragged him from a car, in the back of a car, in chains down the street, and then strung him up on a tree and built a bonfire under his body and burned him. So, they lynched him. So I pointed out that, sometimes it takes more than one Ranger to handle a riot. And this slogan is part of their image making that doesn't really hold up to factual examination.
One of the slogans that the Rangers had in President Lyndon Baines Johnson of Texas, and of course the man who signed the Civil Rights Bill, he had a quote from Captain McNally, I believe, "Courage is a man who keeps coming on." And some people attribute that to perhaps what he was doing in Vietnam.
Yeah, that's true. He used to cite that. Now, whether McNally or some other Rangers said it, that's a matter of debate. But the fact with McNally is that he invaded Mexico, trying to start a war with Mexico. He was after some cattle that belonged to the King Ranch. But what he and the owners of the King Ranch wanted to do was start an armed conflict with Mexico so they could go in and seize more land. And McNally and his Rangers went across the river and killed some innocent people, retrieved some cattle, and that was that. What happened with McNally was some two decades after he died, one of his fellow Rangers wrote a book about him. It was mostly made up, mostly a bunch of fables, just fabrications. But it became a very well-known book, famous book, and this enhanced McNally's reputation such that he's one of the most revered Rangers of today. He's in the Ranger Hall of Fame. But it's mostly based on this fabricated book.
Doug, our listeners might be interested also in the role the Texas Rangers played in the El Paso Juarez border.
Yeah, that's I'm sure you guys are familiar with that, and that's there's a lot of things took place out there that were not the most flattering and were actually terrible. I mean, just to mention one, there's the Porvenir massacre, which has lately been talked about for a long time. It wasn't, but what happened is in January of 1918, about half a dozen Rangers and some U.S. Army men went out to this tiny town of Porvenir out on the Rio Grande, just full of very poor people. The Rangers pulled 15 men and boys out of the village one night and put them up against a rock wall and executed them. They were ages 16 to 72. And this was forgotten for a long, long time. But because of the efforts of some historians, now it's been talked about. It was mentioned in an exhibit at the State History Museum in Austin a while back. And now there's a state historic marker commemorating this. But that's just one example of some of the things that happened out in that part of the border that were terrible.
Doug, is there a website that people can go to find out more about you, this book, and some of your other works?
Well, I'm on Facebook at Doug J. Swanson. I'm still working on my website. So that's under construction right now. The book is available wherever fine books are sold. That's, I guess, about the best I can say at this point.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us. We really appreciate talking with you.
Oh, thanks for having me. I had a great time.
We've been visiting with award-winning journalist and author Doug Swanson. The book is called Cult of Glory, The Bold and Brutal History of the Texas Rangers.